Hello, Internet friend. I'm David Ravel, and this is ValueSign for Monday, July 31. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit ValueSign.com. Well, today, Biden's chance for peace. For nearly a decade now, Ukraine has been the center of two conflicts, the military and the diplomatic. We've all seen the military conflict. It's fought by Leopard tanks and Kinzhal missiles, and it's the one that grabs all the headlines, the one that many Americans follow. But while the military battle garners our attention, as long as this remains a regional conflict, it's not likely that this part of the war will have much of an impact on our day-to-day lives. But the same cannot be said about the diplomatic war that revolves around the Ukraine conflict. This part of the war has already impacted our lives and promises to do much more in the future. Now, while it's easy to spot the two armies in the military conflict with their distinctive blue and yellow flags for the Ukrainians and the red, white, and blue flag for the Russians, it's not so easy to recognize the diplomatic armies. That's because this diplomatic war is fought not on the physical battlefield, but in the genteel atmosphere of the boardrooms in Moscow, Brussels, and Washington, D.C. Commanding the Russian diplomatic army is that familiar figure Vladimir Putin, while for the combined forces in opposition are Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission, and Joe Biden, President of the United States. And while it could be said that Russia has been the aggressor in the military incursion in Ukraine, it was, after all, the first to cross into Ukrainian territory. On the diplomatic battlefront, however, it's been the Euro-Americans who have fired the first shots. It may surprise you to learn that sanctions against Russia began in 2014, 8 years before the incursion by Russia into Ukraine. Now, the sanctions were in response to the election and subsequent annexation of Crimea by Russia. Crimea has an ancient history going back at least 500 years before the birth of Christ. In modern times, Crimea became part of the Imperial Russia when Catherine the Great conquered the Ottoman Empire in 1783. From that time forward, Crimea was associated with the Russians and subsequently Soviet Empire until the fall of the USSR in 1992. And after the fall of the Soviet Union, for 3 years, Crimea became an independent republic. But then in 1995, Crimea came under Ukrainian rule. And after 18 years under Ukraine, sentiment in Crimea was for independence from the government in Kiev. A referendum was held asking whether the Crimeans would like to remain with Ukraine or join the Russian Federation. And the results were nearly unanimous. Fully 97% of Crimea's voters voted to join the Russian Federation. Ukraine immediately objected to that election, and the sanctions were on. Now, the first move in the conflict in Ukraine were diplomatic, as the European Union canceled a long-planned EU-Russian summit. Next, the formerly G8 group of advanced economies became the G7 as Russia was summarily ousted from the International Association. And since then, the Euro-Americans have steadily increased the diplomatic sanctions imposed on Russia, and most recently by the EU's revoking of visas for Russian officials and business people to the European Union. And historically, this has been the diplomatic action that often leads to all-out military conflict, a conventional war. After 8 years of steadily increasing economic and diplomatic sanctions by the Euro-Americans against Russia, we came to the critical 2 days that transformed a diplomatic struggle into the largest military conflict since World War II. Here, then, is the timeline for these most critical 48 hours. On the evening of February 21, 2023, President Vladimir Putin addressed the Russian people. In a one-hour speech, Putin outlined the history of Ukraine, how it is a close relationship to Russia for over a millennia. He then describes the current threat that Ukraine's increasing alliance with NATO has to the Russian Federation. He points out that the strategic military capability that NATO would gain should Ukraine join the alliance would be a threat to Russia, how Russia would be completely vulnerable to a nuclear attack launched by NATO from Ukraine. He notes that in 1991, James Baker, then Secretary of State, and President H.W. Bush had promised Mikhail Gorbachev that NATO would not expand eastward. At the end of the speech, Putin points out that the regions of Donetsk and Luhansk had both sought independence from Kyiv and that Russia would recognize these two regions as independent. Now, nothing in Russia's speech could be used as a declaration of war. Yes, Russia had amassed thousands of troops on their border, but at this point, no one had crossed that red line. It was, at this point, a situation much like North and South Korea. China recognized the North, while the U.S. recognized the South, and in between, thousands of troops stand battle-ready, but after more than half a century, there is still a truce. Now, the armies in North and South Korea stood down so that the diplomats could bring peace. Now, 24 hours after President Putin's speech, on February 22nd, at 2 in the afternoon, came President Biden's response. And to say that he was listening to a different Putin speech is to put it charitably. Biden begins his speech by saying, quote, "To put it simply, Russia just announced that it is carving out a big chunk of Ukraine," unquote. Really? Was Biden conflating the recognition of Donetsk and Luhansk as Russia's taking over those territories? Now, this is admittedly a fine point, but on this day, February 22nd, there was an opportunity for the American president to talk. Russia was not yet in Ukraine on February 22nd. It was two full days before the invasion took place. The initiative for war or peace was solidly with the president. But instead of reaching for the olive branch, Biden chose to again increase sanctions, to visibly demonstrate to Russia that America was not going to negotiate. Biden took the hard line, and that has become the hallmark of his administration in this conflict. Biden goes on to say, quote, "This is the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, so I'm going to begin to impose sanctions in response, far beyond the steps we and our allies and partners implemented in 2014. And if Russia goes further with this invasion, we stand prepared to go further, as with sanctions," unquote. True to his word, Biden imposed steadily increasing sanctions, and not just the halting of commercial interchange, Biden went on to seize financial assets. Initially, $30 billion in assets owned by Russian individuals, oligarchs as they were labeled, and eventually $300 billion worth owned by the Central Bank of Russia. As one Russian banker put it, "We've been struck by a financial nuclear bomb." Now, it was clear to even the most casual observer that Biden was launching the most aggressive financial, economic, and diplomatic sanctions at his disposal. What's critical to remember is that all of these aggressive words by the American president occurred 24 hours before Russia invaded Ukraine. Now, we may never know if that invasion could have been averted if Biden had offered to negotiate instead of to raise more sanctions. But it's a question worth pondering. Remember, Biden spoke on the 22nd. Russian troops crossed into Ukraine on February 24th. And that's The Value Side for Monday, July 31. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit valueside.com. I'm David Revelle. Value Side is independently written and researched. the views expressed are strictly my own.